Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Are you hungry? Okay, so let's talk about pocket injection. How many of you knows what are the pocket injection? Oh. Okay. I'm a professor. I like to ask students questions so that they don't fall asleep. So more questions are coming, but no quiz. Where do I control here? Here.
You can just use the left button there to move
forward. I think we had enough background information about injections and the grassland. The major drive for the pocket injection is about soil disturbance. So what we want low soil disturbance. That's why we want to do a pocket injection. And traditional injection tools like sweep injectors or disc or chisel and others, they may have a higher soil disturbance, which may not be suitable for grassland applications because of crop damage. So we were thinking hard, what kind of equipment can be used for forage field? And it came with aerators. I don't know if you have better equipment to suggest. So we went with the aerators. You know how it works. Those rolling tanks, so we call rolling tanks. Those peaks are ground driven. Basically dig holes on the ground. And those holes are referred as soil pockets. That's why where the pockets come from. So you see the pockets on the surface, so each black spot represent one pocket. Aerators have been used for many applications, as you have heard. But what I heard this morning wasn't so great in terms of odor and ammonia emissions. Because it's not about, it's not an injection. The definition of injection is to place manure under the surface, right? So all manure goes to the surface. That's the idea, injection. So what the current aerator does when you use for manure application, they place some manure into soil pockets, right? Which sounds like injection, it's a dessert. But there are some manures is placed on the soil surface in between pockets because they use banding techniques. So you see the bands on the surface. So the manure placed on the surface, which is not desired. So if we keep the desired part and avoid undesired part, and then you got injection. So that's where the pocket injection came. So the pocket injection is defined as place manure into soil pockets, not in between. So that's the intention. So to further understand the pocket injection, we do a little bit comparison. So one is the injection, that's conventional injection, one's the pocket. So in conventional injection, we use the tillage tools, just about any tillage, sweeps, a disc. In pocket injection, we use aerator. The tools of the aerator, those spikes, we call rolling tanks. In conventional injection, you open furrows. In pocket injection, you create pockets. In conventional, you place manure in furrows as a continuous bands. And in pocket, you place into pockets. So in terms of manure delivery system, in a conventional, manure flows continuously, right? But in pocket injection, the manure has to flow intermittently. So it flows, stop, flows, stop. So the conventional can be referred as a furrow injection and versus pocket injection. So now you are with me for pocket injection? Good. So there are two steps to do. One is create pockets. You can use airway rolling tanks or other aerators, and you can design your own aerators. And second stop to deliver manure, flow stop, that kind of pattern, or you see in pulses. You can use a pulsing meter. That's what we have done to develop a pulsing meter which can create manure pulses. So the first step, we have to study the pocket, how big the pocket and how wide it opens, that kind of thing, because it affects the manure application rate. I'll talk about that later because of the time. You want to go for lunch, right? So to study pockets, we study what kind of pockets different rolling tines create. So like the first picture that spikes is kind of triangle, and then the second picture shows the tine is leaf shape, we call leaf tine. By the way, which tine you think create bigger pocket? Oh, I got two answers. It's hard to say. Even the manufacturers, they are not sure. But our experience is the first one. The first one create a larger pocket. Also, you can offset those tines, and then you got angles. Everybody would know larger offset angle create a larger pocket. And then penetration depth. So if you go deeper, the pocket will be larger. How about soil? In terms of clay and sandy, which soil will have larger pocket with the same tan? Clay or sand?
Clay.
Good. You're an excellent student. So we studied this. And you may be interested in measurement techniques. We measure the pocket volume, how big the pocket, because which affect manure application rate. The maximum manure you can apply is equal to the number of the pockets times the pocket size, the volume of the pocket. And we also study the opening. So those two pictures is top view of the pocket. If the pocket open large, it will be easier to place manure, right? So pocket opening is important too. And also the pocket shape, is it round or narrow, and how liquid distribute in soil after being placed into a pocket. This technique is to measure the pocket volume. Student just poured the sand, which has to be dry, flowing sand. So the amount you pour into the pocket until the pocket is full, the amount of the sand you used is assumed to be equal to the volume of the pocket. And the opening, you can simply take a transparency, put on the surface, and then use a permanent marker to trace the boundary, and then you take the transparency to the light, you quantify them, how wide, how large, what's the area, okay? And then you will figure out how easy you can place manure into the pocket. And for the pocket shape, so we bought some material like a cement or plaster from Home Depot, put appropriate water, create a kind of slurry, and then you pour into a pocket until it's full. And then you wait for an hour or so, and then dig it out, it becomes solid. You can, so the right picture, that's the pocket shape. So you can keep it forever. It's a piece of art. So you know how the pocket look like. So what you see the pocket is from a side view, perpendicular to the travel direction. So it look like triangle. If you look from the front, it will be narrow. Look from the top, it will be like whatever, slot. So now you know the pocket shape. So we pour all kind of things, sand and plaster. And here we put dyed water or manure. We want to see once manure goes into a pocket, how it distributes, which affects the nutrient distribution in soil. So we use blue dye. You put in the water or liquid manure, and you pour again into a pocket, and then you can get very beautiful pictures. You see how the dye goes, which represents how far manure goes. So the students call me Dr. Pruning. So we put sand and cement and liquid, all kind of things. But it works very well if you want to use. Here is only one slide to show you examples. I have several students work on that. This is one of the results, show you the pocket volume, which is kind of under 250 milliliter, but some pockets are larger than this, up to 350 milliliter. So it shows in the clay soil, penetration depths greater or have a larger pocket, and then you'll see the different shape of tanks also affect. So if you are interested, you can contact me for those results. I forgot to ask you a question, but that's okay. And then now you understand the pocket. Now it's time to design the pulsing meter, which can deliver manure in pulses. We have designed three prototypes shown in the picture. So I won't talk about the detail. Basically, it does to generate a flow of pulses. So manure flow from the top and come out with the pulses. The last prototype, we put in the current airway machine to create a pocket injector. So the larger picture here, here is the tank in the front. Here is the tube to deliver bands. This is our original system. So we remove these couple tubes. We put a pulsing meter here. It's quite easy. We just use a chin and a sprocket drive to connect two shafts. So the tank is ground driven. And then when this one rotates, we'll make this one rotate. So you don't have to introduce extra drive, put a motor or something. That's a good thing. There are three issues. One is the volume of the pulse has to be similar to the volume of the pocket, right? Second issue is every rotate of this rolling tank creates four pockets. And every rotate of the pulsing meter generates one or two pulses. But the last prototype generates two pulses. So you have to make every rotate of the shaft have two rotations of the pulsing meter. So the number of the pockets equal to the number of pulses. You just need the appropriate gear ratio for that chin drive. But the third is the timing. When the pulsing meter deliver flow, it has to be on top of a pocket, right? And then after passing over that pocket, you stop flow. And then when reach to the next pocket, and the manure starts. So you flow, stop at the right location, right time. So there's a synchronization of pulsing action and pocket location on the ground. So this is how the pocket injector look like. We don't have much money to build this pulsing meter. We just built one, and this is our original, this is our original. So pulsing meter replaced those manure delivery tube. So we tested. It wasn't work too great, but it does reduce manure exposure on the surface to a certain extent. But we're still working on that. Those are the two summaries. I will skip this and go to the challenges for pocket injection. So now we know pocket injection, it doesn't exist. Whether it works or not. So we look at some challenges. First challenge is the limitation of manure application rate, which is limited by the volume of soil pockets, volume of the pulse. You can create only so many pockets in the field. If you create too many, you're causing higher soil disturbance. That defeats the purpose, so, right? So many soil pockets, and limited the volume of the pockets. So you can put only so much manure. So we estimate it's about 4,000 gallons per acre, which could be lower than your desired. But in the future, if you have phosphorus limitation regulation, it could be okay. And then, oops, I went back. Okay. Second is certain manure exposed on the surface because the pocket is so narrow, that's within the current every machine. But if you can design your own machine, you may want a wider pocket opening, and then it will be easier for manure to place into the pocket. So synchronization of delivering paths of manure with the position of the pocket is also a challenge, but technically it can be achieved. The last challenge could be the travel speed. Travel speed is not limited by the aerator. It's basically limited by the passing meter. And in the live test, we found that if you run the passing meter too fast, your pulse is become smaller, the volume of the pulse. That's you don't want. So you can only go so fast. This is because the passing meter is driven by the air meter, the aerator, right? So if you go fast and the passing meter run fast too, so it's connected. So let's come to the conclusions. The concept of pocket injection proved to be technically feasible, but the equipment is critical. The current stage of the equipment, like current aerator and the passing meter, are basically for low manure application rates. If you want higher manure application rates, we have to improve. Maybe improvement is limited. And the prototype passing meter limits the field travel speed. So we have to redesign the passing meter, improve the passing meter. And of course, further research on pocket injection and the equipment is required if we have money. Okay, that's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Dr. Chen on the pocket injection? What's the park?
The maximum application rate, 4,000 gallons, that would deliver more or less 40 to 50 kilograms of total nitrogen only.
Yeah.
So for an annual crop, that is not much.
Not much.
You need various passes.
Yeah. You're right.
So the volume and the capacity was done on a soil that had no crop growing on it. So my question is, if this was to be applicable to an annual crop, how would you get enough nitrogen on it?
I think whether to annual or to forage crop, it won't change a lot in terms of the limitation. It's equipment limitation.
Yeah.
We desire the higher rate. Too. We want higher rate, but we cannot, because if you put too much manure, the manure will flood over the pocket.
Yeah.
So pocket cannot contain the manure.
Well, we had the same problem of limitations of the equipment.
Limitation. So it's the concept of the pocket injection. It's by nature, it's for lower rate.
Could Dr. Chen double the amount of pockets that you create by having two ranks of pockets and two ranks of pulsars?
Two ranks of?
Two rows.
You mean more pockets. Definitely. You make it closer. The current spacing is 19 centimeters. It's about 6 inch. So you can make it closer, but it's also limited. I think if you make it closer, you can increase to 5,000 or 6,000 gallons. That's my estimation. But higher than that, it's almost not possible, probably. I'm just saying negative things. Maybe you don't like pocket injection anymore, but it's still there, but it's alternative for low application rate situation.
All right, well, you know, all innovations have their hurdles. Are there any questions for any of the previous speakers? We basically raced through this morning, didn't have a lot of time for questions, so if you can just indicate who the person is.
I don't know who the person is, anyone can answer, but
general subject area.
We would like to make the pocket injector work, but in our work in Ontario, in medium and heavier textured soils, it really impacted what the moisture of the soil was in terms of getting the infiltration from that pocket. Because when that tine went in, it almost like sealed
it on,
as it made that pocket, and you had a lot of tine before that absorbed in relative to the other types of methods. But those other types of methods take a lot more horsepower to work than the airway, so we want the airway to work, but that's a real struggle for us.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that. That's a major advantage, the less power requirement, because the rolling, no open furrows. Open furrow, you break ground, always need more power.
We did see the two tines that you showed, the leaf tine and the shatter tine, I think you called it. When we started our research, we actually had quite the sales pitch from a couple of these aeration companies with solid tine aerators. And one of the companies, I will mention it, indicated that the other company tended to smear or seal more given the angle of entry than their particular one. But in terms of performance, we really didn't notice any difference. Any other questions, John?
This is one of the things, I guess, from some of the earlier speakers. We were talking about the relationship between injection and nitrous oxide emissions. And I'm just curious if anybody's trying to separate out the higher nitrogen rate from the manure effect. In other words, you're retaining more N, so you predict more nitrous oxide emissions, but at the same time, you're putting manure in a concentrated band. I was curious if any of the earlier speakers had seen it.
I won't put anybody on the spot, but is there anybody in the room that we do have a speaker this afternoon who's also going to be talking about some of the nitrogen trade-offs, and he happens to be in the room. But does anybody want to address that question? Or? To be answered later. Yeah, that's it. Dan.
I had a couple of comments about the denitrification. I can see where it may increase it in certain situations, certainly, but I think we need to keep in mind that the amounts you're talking about here are much smaller than what we're talking about with ammonia volatilization. Not near the volume of nitrogen loss. The other thing is, we actually, I don't know if you saw in the most recent Journal of Soil and Water Conservation, Laura Christensen had an article in there where they're actually using denitrification bioreactors for nitrate reduction. So, if that's going to be a problem, we may need to look at, are we really going the right way with some of these other denitrification technologies where we're actually deliberately increasing denitrification? Just a couple of thoughts on that.
Okay. I think Tav's had a response to John.
One comment on that. Nitrous oxide emission, because we've just, like I said, the one paper where we tried to look at different application rates, different application techniques, how we influence nitrous oxide emission. What we found was in these sand soils where we have done the experiments, it's less than 1% of the nitrogen is converted actually to nitrous oxide. So it is relatively little. And if you then try to make a carbon footprint calculation, then the ammonia which is not emitted. I mean, if you want to replace that with mineral fertilizer, then in fact the carbon footprint is, how can I say, positive for the soil effect. But I've also seen some Finnish studies in Finland where they have very heavy clay soils, and they involve about 6 to 7% of the nitrogen as nitrous oxide, and then the carbon footprint is totally destroyed because, it's 200, I don't know how many times nitrous oxide is more powerful greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So it's very, very related to the soil side.
The point's well taken. I guess my point is that I think it depends a lot on the situation, what kind of soil, how poorly drained it is.
For sure.
And again, if it is a problem, Now you could be releasing nitrogen either as in N2O or N2. In some of these situations, like with a created wetland or whatever, where you have a saturated system, a lot more of that nitrogen, or most of it's probably going to N2, which doesn't have the environmental impact. Where in a field situation, quite often a larger portion of it is N2O. And weighing that's always a problem, and how do you put a value on it? But that's what I talked about this afternoon. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's one I think we definitely need to look at more. It apparently varies a lot.
Dr. Pittman?
Yeah, just a quick point. If you'll note that the application rates mentioned for Denmark and for Europe are in a neighborhood of not exceeding 50 tons, you said, right?
But then the slurry is so much more concentrated.
Right, and so it's just interesting that the information from Europe is really different than the information from North America, because their application rates, 50 cubic meters, about 5,000 gallons per acre, works up pretty close. So that was the target of 4,500 gallons, I think you were saying. It was actually in the high end of what they would be even thinking about in Europe. And mostly it's about 3,000 gallons.
Yeah.
Right, and even that sometimes is high.
Yeah.
So it's just there's a real, and I think that some of the reasons, I'm not sure, but I get the feeling some of the reasons why sometimes the European literature and the North American literature is different, it's just because there's vastly different application rate expectations.
Mm-hmm. I was a little concerned that nobody addressed the side of the equation on stand longevity from doing the trafficking and the injections. So for enforced stands, the first author talked about getting out there 7 to 10 days after. We find if we're not out there 2 to 3 days after, we're starting to have impact on stand. And from an environmental perspective, you need to consider that if all of a sudden I've reduced that forest stand by 1 or 2 years and have to go in and till it and reestablish it, I've got a cost there. So I think this whole trafficking thing and the impact of that weight and the slitting and such needs to be accounted for in the environmental assessments.
All right. Does anybody want to respond, or is the,
I completely agree with the compaction point, and I think that the traffic on the field is a really big issue that's understated. I completely agree with that. Our experience with the tines is that if you don't use them more than twice a year, under our conditions, there's no deterioration of stand whatsoever. We've done multiple years.
With legumes, or is that just grass?
Just grass.
Just grass. It's the legumes that we're most worried
about. But I think that there could be some rejigging of the shape of the tines.
Yeah.
When I find, just observationally, that if the tines are worn down a little bit, they work a little bit better.
Okay, all right. Well, one of the points of this session was to draw out the site-specific nature of kind of the performance of the various applicators. And so certainly when you go from just agronomic issues to environmental ones, or emphasizing environmental ones, that those trade-offs can, become almost bewildering at times. And so you really do need to, kind of consider your unique condition. So we'll finish with John Laurie's question.
I guess, or maybe a little bit of a comment. I guess from a feasibility perspective, discharge rate is the thing that producers are focused on. So I guess if we do comparisons of these various systems, I guess it would be nice if people reported the discharge rates that were associated with their equipment, because that's what really controls how fast they can storage facility. So, anyways, that's just a thing.
Okay. Point well taken. Okay. Well, I want to thank everyone who's participated so far. This session continues this afternoon, starting at 1 o'clock, or actually 12:55, in the room next door. And Dr. Doug Beagle's going to be moderating. Then we also have the poster session. And like I said, there's a handful of posters. They're I think the numbers are in the 300 range. The lower 300 range, and so I encourage you to try to attend those. Those begin around 4 o'clock with the authors present. And thanks a lot for your contributions.